The Scintillation is an annual symposium of fans of Sherlock Holmes, Dr. Watson, and Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, sponsored by Watson's Tin Box in Maryland. The event includes speakers and attendees from around the United States, as well as local Sherlockians. The tradition they have established is to have at least one first-time presenter in order to offer an opportunity for them to have the experience of public speaking to a friendly crowd. The Scintillation is a Sherlockian family reunion. During the day's festivities, they offer many opportunities for attendees to socialize. There is a traditional English afternoon tea over which old friendships are renewed and new friendships are begun. The camaraderie and longtime friendships of Sherlockians are legendary. Please come and experience this for yourself. Find out more at www.scintillation.org. West Express is our publisher and our sponsor, so they're doubly awesome. If you journey to www.wessexpress.com, you'll be directed to Gasogene Books, an imprint, and the premier Sherlock Holmes publisher, dedicated to the study of Holmes and his world. There's a broad array of titles to appeal to even the discriminating reader, such as Michael Cox's book about producing the Granada television series, as well as CDs and pastiches. The newest edition is The Strand in Sherlock Holmes, a study of the greatest partnership in literary history by Robert Veld. Why don't you go check it out? Go to www.wessexpress.com. If you subscribe to the Baker Street Journal, you should have received your autumn edition, or it's on its way to you. If you haven't subscribed, why do you hate happiness? The Baker Street Journal continues to be the leading Sherlockian publication since its founding in 1946 by Edgar W. Smith. With both serious scholarship and articles that play the game, the journal is essential reading for anyone interested in Sherlock Holmes, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, and the world where it is always 1895. So why wait? Subscribe now at www.bakersheetjournal.com. So I meant to record that with my actual microphone, but for some reason it went to my default laptop one, so I'm sorry that I sounded particularly stuffy. I am sick, but I'm not that sick. Anywho, this is a very amusing episode, but also I think really important. It's sort of like the elephant in the room for not only many of our podcasts, but in general. So this is a two-parter episode. The next part will come out next week, and it is all about porn, sex, slash, doing the dirty horizontal tango, whatever you want to call it. And this first part, we are lucky enough to have Les Klinger on it. And I'm sure some of you are like, what? But no, Les has the largest collection of Sherlockian pornography in the world. Yes, that's right. Let that sink in. You can dirty laugh. That's fine. That's absolutely fine. And I'm just letting you all know that we talk about all sorts of things on these two episodes. So if you're at all bashful or modest, you're probably going to get over that fairly quickly, or you're just going to giggle through the whole thing, which is perfectly fine. But yes, these are dirty. They're dirty, dirty, dirty. But they're also, we talk a lot about, you know, female sexual empowerment, why, you know, a lot of girls prefer sort of like the male on male sort of thing. Hey, guys like lesbian porn. We can like gay porn too. It happens. So yes, on this episode, there's myself, there's Les, Lindsay is on it, as is our newest Baker Street babe, Liz, and we have some fabulous guests as well. There is the artist Sketchlock, the artist Reaperson, and fanfic author Mad Laurie. So yes, it's a really fun and great time. I hope you enjoy it. And yeah, go get your dirty on.
Oh, they call us the irregulars, but baby, we're always on time. Baker Street babes always leave the rest of them behind. Oh, so in Scotland Yard they send you home, you feel like you're losing your mind. Quotidian world has got you crying, won't you? your 221 mine.
Sherlock. Oh, that's...
Me? Yeah, fine.
That thing that you did that you offered to do, that was good.
I'm glad no one saw that.
Hmm?
You ripping my clothes off in a darkened swimming pool, people might talk.
Be with you, little else.
And welcome to episode 44 of the Baker Street Babes podcast. This episode is all about the naughtier side of Sherlockiana. So we're going to be talking about pornography, slash, fanfic, fan art, and all the delightful little morsels in between. If you were under 18, please hide this from your parents. And if you are over 18, feel free to enjoy yourself as you listen to this in the dulcet tones.
Share it with your parents.
Share it with your parents. if you
That'll
have
be a fun bonding exercise.
Yes, yeah, a very interesting bonding exercise. On today's show, there's obviously me, Carly. We have Lindsay and newest Baker Street babe, Liz. Say hello, ladies.
Hello!
What's up?
What's up? We also have third-time guest, the fabulous Sherlockian scholar, Leslie Klinger.
Woo! Third-time loser.
Oh, burn.
There should be something. There's got to be a prize of some sort for, like, the trifecta of guest starring.
He gets
on
a bikini.
Really?
Yes.
A mankini?
A mankini. It's in the mail.
Oh, thank you.
It has Benedict Cumberbatch, like, all over it, so feel free to wear it at all next summer's parties. It'll be great. Also, we have three fabulous guests, other fabulous guests on this episode. I guess starting off, if you are into fan fiction at all, you most definitely know the fabulous Mad Lori. Yay!
Hello, it's me, Lori.
Yeah, I have really bad intros, I'm sorry. And we have two fabulous fan artists. First off, we have Sketchlock.
Oh, hi.
All Tuna Lock related questions should be directed to Sketch.
But I really have nothing to do with that.
I know. Commentary I know to be.
But there are seals and they're both like water related, so.
Oh.
I don't know. I'm reaching.
No, you're right, Lori. She's the expert.
Total expert. And we also have the famous and infamous Reaper Sun.
Hi, hello.
Yeah, so first thing we do whenever we have new guests is that we induct them as honorary Baker Street Babes. So, Lindsay, did you want to do the first honors? Pick your poison.
Oh, sure. Sure, why not? Sketch. So,
okay.
God, what are our questions?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yes.
How did you get into Sherlock
How
Holmes?
How did you get into Sherlock Holmes? What was your introduction to this crack-filled world that we all live in? This beautiful, beautiful place.
I actually thought about this a while ago, and at first I thought it was because of the Robert Downey Jr. movies, because that was kind of how, like, in more recent years, I kind of knew about it, but I realized later on that I grew up on Detective Conan, which is, like, you know, the anime based off of Sherlock Holmes, but I just never noticed that because I never got to read it or anything, so I realized that was really what it was.
Oh, that's killer. I like that. Good start. Off to a good start. What is your favorite case from the original Sherlock Holmes canon?
Oh, man.
Best question on Earth, I know.
Oh, that's really hard. I think either between the Speckled Band or oh man, this is really hard. I have too many. Like, I really love the Copper Beaches as well as the Solitary Cyclist and the Devil's Foot. So like, there's all four of those.
like a collection of violets, basically.
Yeah.
Just all
the most terrible stories.
all the violets. That's beautiful. Good answer.
Oh, wait. And the illustrious client. That's one of my favorites, too.
That's another violet! You got it! Yeah. All four violets, I think, were in there. Awesome. totally respectable. That's beautiful. Who is your favorite character in the Sherlock Holmes canon?
In the canon?
Well, in any adaptation, it doesn't really matter. I mean, like, who's your favorite character? Who do you most identify with? Who do you most glee over?
Probably Watson, I guess. I mean, that's kind of the question, the answer people usually come up with, but, like, as an overall, probably Watson.
There's nothing wrong with you. what's your favorite adaptation?
Currently, I mean, I guess it's probably the BBC, but also then, you know, Great Mouse Detective.
And yes!
I have yet to watch Tom and Jerry and Sherlock Holmes. I have the DVD. Now I'll watch it someday.
I haven't watched it either, but I was given it as a gift at Sherlockpalooza. Someone gave it to me. He's like, you should watch this. I'm like, I will, and I haven't, and I feel really
My friend
bad
actually
about that.
Gave it to me for Christmas. Yeah. And I was watching Clockwork Orange with my friend the other day, and we realized that Malcolm, or actually maybe getting the name wrong, but the man who was Alex actually voiced Moriarty in the Tom and Jerry Sherlock. I mean,
you're
Tom and Jerry Sherlock. Yeah. He is. Looked it up. It was hilarious.
Oh, I haven't seen that either. I'm excited. Chris, bring it next weekend. Viewing party. And finally,
B minus. It's a B minus C plus.
Oh, really? Is it kind of disappointing for what?
Yeah, don't get too excited. There's very little Sherlockian content other than people running around in deerstalkers. You know.
I kind of assumed that would be. But
you're talking to people who, like, really like the Asylum Sherlock Holmes.
There's nothing wrong with the Asylum Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, wait a minute. No, but that's quality. Quality cheese. There's
okay.
good cheese and there's bad cheese, you know?
It's true, and mini T-Rexes and brothers named Thorpe are good cheese.
Yeah.
we have one further question for Sketch, and that is not the same question as... Who's your favorite character, but who would you most want to sit down and have a cream tea with and chat with from the canon?
No, see, I changed the question. I sent you a chat.
You did?
I themed it.
Oh, then delete that part. You say the next question.
Oh, my goodness. Uh-oh. I don't know. I want to hear the revised question given the topic.
Oh, dear.
You know I was asleep all day. Sorry, go on. What is the question?
Oh, which character would you want to bang?
Yeah, that's
oh
what
my god, really?
That's more appropriate for this podcast.
Right?
Thank you, Chris. Well played. So, Sketch.
Wow.
You could tap that. That. In the Sherlockian.
I'm thinking I'm probably the youngest one right here.
Okay.
And, honestly, none of them. Because sex isn't that sexy.
Fair enough.
That's fair.
In my opinion.
That's fair. It's a fair answer. So, going with the, yes, you can,
you
can
be best friends with everyone. That's it.
You can be the fifth on that one. It's all good. 100%. So, Lori.
Yes.
Oh, let's interrogate Lori.
Yay!
Get all over.
I will get all over, Lori.
Now that I just ate a digestive biscuit, so I'm upping my Anglophile points just right now.
Okay. Winning.
All right, Lori, how did you get into Sherlock Holmes?
Well, I love the canon stories since I was a wee thing, you know, a teenager when I first discovered them. And, you know, a lot of us are teenagers and you discover the stories and you read the stories and they're fabulous stories. And then you're all about that. Yeah, it was a long time ago, because I am old, old, old.
You are not. I've seen you in the
first one you're on with.
There is no one old on this podcast.
All right, so who's your favorite character from the stories or adaptations or...
Well, I'm tempted to say Sherlock, because, I mean, that's kind of... What hooks you into the stories, I think, is the character of Sherlock and how fascinating he is. But mm-hmm. I'm going to put that aside as, like, a given and move on to other characters. I actually am very fond of Mycroft in the canon myself. I think he's very interesting, and I wish there had been more of him in the canon, so I'm going to go with that.
He's the best.
Yeah. A lot of people haven't actually given that answer, so...
Yay! I like to be special! Yay!
You're special. Yay. And going along with that, it would, you know, the Greek Interpreter be your favorite story, or did you have another one?
Greek Interpreter is definitely one of my favorite stories. Because I am a slasher, I have to say Three Garadebs is one of my favorite stories. That's, like, required.
Garadebs!
Oh my god! But I'm also very fond of Five Orange Pips, because when I, and this is purely sentimental and so stupid, but because when I was a kid and I was reading this story, and they were talking about, oh, it's this mysterious KKK thing, and I was like, well, I know what that is. Why don't you guys know what that is? And I felt so superior. I knew what that was, and they did not know what that was. And I read the whole story expecting there to be some kind of twist where it wasn't what I thought it was, i.e. the Ku Klux Klan. But then it was! And it was this revelation to me that when this story was written, people did not have a wide knowledge of the Ku Klux Klan. So I have kind of sentimental fondness for that story because of that. I also really like Dancing Men because I love code breaking.
Yeah.
So...
both of those cases are interesting because it seems like Arthur Conan Doyle had a real, and I think Les would agree, or, you know, anyone else chatting, fascination with America and Americans. Mm-hmm. And, you know, these sort of exotic, oh, I'm going to do the Scowers and the Molly Maguires and the Pinkertons and the KKK and the...
giant thing about Mormons.
Yeah.
Yeah, that giant bit about Mormons.
Giant bit about Mormons. Yeah.
That's a long bit.
It's a long bit.
It's a
little bit of a lot.
Okay, so what's your favorite adaptation?
Well, it was BBC Sherlock that got me back into the active fandom, so there's that. I'm also very fond of Young Sherlock Holmes starring Chris Rowe.
Aww.
I am very fond of that, yes. And I actually haven't seen the second Downey movie, Ritchie movie, but I did really enjoy the first one, actually. Yeah, well, I always loved the idea of Holmes as an action hero, and I felt like that was in the canon stories, but it just, Doyle never wrote it. It was like, it was off screen. Like, he would write Holmes coming in saying, oh, it's a good thing I am so knowledgeable with a stick, and I beat those guys to hell, but he never showed it.
Like, Mr. Woodley went home in a cart, or the same thing in Naval Treaty, where he's like, yeah, my hand's fucked up for reasons, just...
yeah.
Yeah.
And I just feel like Doyle, because that wasn't really the story convention at the time to put in all that action stuff. And of course, since Watson was telling it, he didn't see it, so he couldn't talk about it. But I always felt like that was there, and it was a legitimate thing to sort of play up in the movie. So I kind of enjoyed that aspect of it.
For sure.
Brilliant. And who would you, if you had the chance, do the horizontal tango with?
Or the vertical tango.
Or the vertical tango. Yeah, that's awesome. Well,
vertical requires more muscle mass. I think if I had the chance to bang Sherlock Holmes in any of his incantations. Did I just say incantations?
You did.
I did not mean that. You know what I meant.
Yes.
Yes, it had an R in it.
Any of his... I can't think of the word. It's in the tip of my tongue.
Incarnation.
Thank you, Leslie. Incarnations. Any of his incarnations, I would not say no, and I would not kick him out of bed for eating crackers or smoking tobacco out of that Persian slipper. So,
it's not your fault. Half the canon is hand porn. Watson's just like he reached his long, white, slender.
We're not going to talk about ejaculations, are we? That's
no, not that. It's just a
we're
lot
not.
Of
we are.
That's cheap.
So many ejaculations.
Ejaculation is cheap. The hand porn is real.
True story. Okay, thank you, Lori. And moving on, Liz, did you want to take Reaper's Son?
Sure.
In the biblical sense?
Yes, please. Reaper, why don't you start by telling us how you got into Sherlock Holmes?
Well, I need to admit that I'm, like, a really disgusting fan, and I got into it based on BBC.
There is nothing
completely.
Wrong with that.
And
There's nothing wrong with that.
I still haven't read all the stories.
That's okay.
So,
There are a lot of them, so I mean, it's not like you were going to just have all kinds of time to suddenly read thousands and thousands of pages, so.
But yeah, so yeah, the BBC version.
That's great. Okay, so who is your favorite character?
I really like Watson, like, in the new version, the BBC version, because, like, I knew the Sherlock Holmes stories, like, vaguely before, and he just seemed like a really, I feel bad saying this, but boring character. He just wasn't that interesting, but then the BBC version made him really interesting, and then also, like, the new films and stuff, so he became kind of my favorite.
Really? Yeah, it's awesome.
That's very cool. I have a soft spot for Watson, too. So it sounds like you haven't had a chance to read all the stories, but maybe if you could think of what your favorite story or favorite adaptation is between what you have read and the adaptations that you've seen.
Well, I like Hounds a lot because it has, like, that slight that supernatural element. So.
Sure. And the big question of the night is, who would you do the dirty with?
Can I answer? Like, can I just walk in on Holmes and Watson together? Like,
yes, you can. You can be a voyeur.
That's my answer.
It's a legitimate lifestyle choice.
Do you have
a big fan of that answer?
Yeah, my sexuality is walking in on my favorite couples.
Fair dose. Sweet.
That was a pithy response.
It was.
What?
Nice.
In a good way. It's good. Yeah. I appreciate that answer.
Totally.
Okay, since Les has to go and eat dinner in 15 minutes, I'm going to go and do the section that was sort of tailored for him. For those who don't know, I don't know if you want to expand on this, Lindsay, that Leslie Klinger is like a porn, Sherlockian porn expert.
It's a fact.
I remember when I went to the Study and Scandal conference and you did the presentation on Victorian porn, and I was very shocked at how very dirty the Victorians were, and they took pictures, and I was like, oh my god.
Yeah, the talk was fun because I traced sort of the Victorian history of pornographers and pornography, and Christina may have noticed at the beginning of the talk, I said, look, there's going to be some really explicit material. If you're sensitive or, you know, easily offended, please leave now. And everybody thought I was kidding. I wasn't. And afterwards, people said to me, wow, I was really worried about crossing the border into Canada with the material that I was carrying.
It was dirty.
My fascination with pornography and Sherlockiana started really when I sort of ran out of things to collect. I said, well, okay, so I'll start by going after every Playboy magazine appearance of Sherlock Holmes, of which there's a bunch. And then from there, it sort of expanded out into things like The Adventure of the Disappearing Dildo and other one. Now, actually, this is a great story. In the early 1970s, I was walking in West Hollywood with my wife, and we passed on the other side of the street an adult bookstore. And in those days, there were still physical adult bookstores. They had sort of all the windows blacked out, and some of them actually charged like 25 cents to come in or something.
Oh, we still have those in suburbia.
Oh, good. So we went in the store, and I said, my antenna, you know, my spider sense was tingling. And it led me to the first item in my collection, which is Larry Townshend's Sexual Adventures of Sherlock Holmes. This is a paperback that was published in the 1970s by the Other Traveler publisher. And in it's called, the principal story is A Study in Lavender. And in it, every male is getting it on with every other male in the canon, and there are very few females on the scene.
They just vanished.
So that was my introduction to the idea that there actually was Sherlockian, we'll call it pornography, but sexually explicit fiction.
Erotica.
Erotica.
There you go. That's the word.
Mm-hmm. And after when I ran out of things to collect, I decided to because of my, I don't want to say stature, my position in the Sherlockian community, I could get away with publishing in the Baker Street Journal a checklist of Sherlockian pornography for sort of those collectors who've run out of things. You know, if I were a little pervert, Steve Rothman wouldn't have published it. But since I'm a big pervert, it was okay.
Beautiful.
So then people started sending me stuff.
Oh, God.
All kinds of things. you know, obviously a great deal of slash, but also what we might call mainstream pornography. Films, photographs, books.
So, may I ask a question? You were being sent things like, I imagine classically, Rohe's, Piercy's, My Dearest Holmes, you know, things that existed in print at the time, maybe Zines, I don't know, but somewhere along the line you started receiving, like, het porn with men in deerstalkers?
Actually, I'm primarily interested in actually published material, but there is a great deal that's actually been printed, even though it first appeared on the internet. And so I have a number of, I'm not sure how to describe them. They're sort of loose leaf books that people have put together that are online fanfic sites where they've collected and published their things. But pictures and films, I can't even remember the name of it. The Harlots of Harlot Hill or something like that.
The Harlots of Harlot Hill. You know, that's a really original title.
I think that's not a good title.
Something else on Harlot Hill, you know.
Sherlock Holmes.
Arians of Harlot Hill. You know, you've got to have harlots on Harlot Hill.
You know, there's all kinds of wonderful things. Sherlock Holmes, one of my favorites. But,
what is your favorite? Describe it.
You know, so there's a lot of sort of... I mean, slash tends to be, well, it's, I don't want to overgeneralize, but there's obviously a lot of same-sex erotica about Holmes. But there's also a fair amount of opposite-sex erotica.
Dude, when I first read, oh, God, the Sherlock Holmes War of the Worlds crossover.
Yes. Manly Wade Wellman's?
Yeah, exactly. And Mrs. Hudson was like 18 and sitting on Sherlock Holmes's lap for half of the novel. There's not enough bleach in the world. I was like, oh man, this is rough. But it's really, you know, it's fun. You can take this character, obviously, and adapt him in any number of directions because, to be honest, data, I cannot make bricks without clay, and we have zero evidence, conclusively speaking, as to whether Sherlock Holmes was heterosexual, homosexual, asexual. So that character is
up for grabs, so to speak. Yeah. Yes.
That leads into a question we got. If you want to do a segue.
Ooh.
Sure. Well, actually, one of the interesting things that I still wonder about is I haven't found any Victorian pornography, including Holmes. And I'm a little surprised.
Oh, that was one of the questions.
Obviously, there's The Pearl and things like that where people made up wonderful pornography. But I would have thought somebody would have, so to speak, grabbed the characters of Holmes and Watson and done something with them. But I haven't found any yet.
Well, that checks one question off the list.
When you do, when, share.
Yeah, what's the earliest piece that you have?
Well, it's this Sexual Adventures. It's this from the 70s. That's the oldest I've found.
Oh, okay.
So is that older than the Zines? The original sort of, you know, that started coming out around the same time as Trekkies were producing them.
Yeah.
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 70s. That surprises me. I'm surprised it's not older.
I may not have found it. I mean, it's, you know, sort of the 70s is when it started getting disseminated.
Exactly.
And this is a real book. I mean, this is a book as opposed to something that we've self-published.
So I guess this still sort of segues. On Twitter, Jenna221Bay asks, did Doyle's Victorian audience use Sherlock Holmes as a sex symbol, or do you think this status was formed more recently?
I can say that Conan Doyle was annoyed that Sherlock Holmes turned into a sex symbol to a certain extent, and he blamed it on Paget. Is that true, Leth?
I think that's right. I mean, you know, Conan Doyle saw this, remember, excuse his expressions, for the man who was half a boy and the boy who was half a man. There's no mention of women there. I think he would have been very surprised to find that he had a lot of readers who were women. I'm sure he did, but I think he would have been surprised about it.
Yeah, because I remember, I forget what episode it was, but we were talking about this, and that Arthur Conan Doyle said that Paget had made Sherlock Holmes a lot more handsome than he had ever envisioned him. And that became, and then his drawings became the face of Holmes, so then everyone was like, oh, look at that guy, he's tall and dark and handsome. And I'm sure Arthur Conan Doyle was like, ah, damn it.
Well, of course, you know, it all changed with Gillette. I mean, Gillette is the one, remember, who said, may I marry him? And so Gillette had the idea of Holmes being romantically involved. There are some earlier plays that similarly had Holmes in romantic situations, but none as successful as the Gillette play, which was 1899.
And he was a stupidly handsome man, so obviously those were extremely popular.
Yes.
And he became the face of Sherlock Holmes not only in advertisements, but in Doris Steele's illustrations as well.
Sure.
And another question from All Your Data 3H. Oh, no, that's... Oh, maybe that's saying when they sent me the tweet. Sorry. All Your Data. in your opinions, did Arthur Conan Doyle intend his work to have homosexual undertones, or is it due to more recent film adaptations?
Well, I don't imagine he had any idea that people would take it as homosexual undertones. I think that for the times, Holmes and Watson have a perfectly normal heterosexual male relationship, meaning they have sex with other people if they have sex at all. They were just friends. I don't think, you know, did the Victorians see homosexual elements in male bonding? I don't think so. Homosexuality was publicly denied and derided. And I think there's no doubt that I can't imagine Doyle thinking that he had created anything that people would interpret as homosexual.
Well, Holmes is a criminal in terms of breaking and entering, but I don't think that he, yeah, I agree. I don't think that he set out to create him as being sexually criminal. And Doyle was, I think, Doyle was a kindly person, and he knew, he met Oscar Wilde famously, and he knew what happened to Oscar Wilde.
Yeah.
So,
That's an interesting question, what Doyle's personal views were about homosexuals. I don't know of any public statements in which he came out against or criticized homosexuality. I think he probably did feel sympathy for Wilde, having been in the wrong place at the wrong time and sort of overreaching. I mean, you know, Wilde's principal crime was hubris.
Well, I think it's probably, you know, a symptom of, I actually think that the homosexuality piece of it and that interpretation is a more recent revelation of audiences' reaction to men being close, both in the form of friendship and in the form of living together physically. Because I think if you think about sort of the new modern idea of masculinity, it isn't very common for men to share so much or to be so even just physically aware of each other all the time. I think that it's probably a kind of a rejection or an assumption from our culture's perspective.
I think I that's right on target.
Liz, I think that's extremely apt. Yep, sorry, Lori, go for it.
I once read a really interesting essay when I was reading Brideshead Revisited for a class, which is another sort of era story that is very famously viewed with a lot of homoerotic undertones. And the essay was by a Victorian scholar who talked about how one thing, us looking back at it makes it look different because we're not aware of the essentially masculine character of Victorian society. where the rules of behavior between men were different than they are now.
Yeah.
So
I think it's not just that, though.
Yeah.
The rules of behavior between men were different, but the rules of behavior for women were markedly different. And part of the reason I think that slash fiction and slash, you know, everything is so popular now is because now women are more open about looking at porn, quite frankly.
Right.
Because it hasn't been very long in the back of my head that I can recall people on the subway openly reading 50 Shades, you know? And so that empowerment that women also enjoy erotica, I think has a great deal to do with the massive outpouring of content. I don't know if that's true or not. It just is associated in my head.
I also think it's, and this is again my reaction to more modern times, but I think women are very attracted to this concept of a sensitivity between two men and having sort of the willingness to share so much of each other's lives, both professionally, personally. And when you think about, I was trying to think, like, what is sort of a similar relationship that we see on screen in terms of two men being very open with each other, making jokes.
Lord of the Rings. And Tonto?
Yeah, but, you know, the example that I thought of, which is, like, the most bizarrely infrequent thing, is the relationship between Simon Pegg and Nick Frost.
Yeah, I totally see that.
The character dynamic that they bring to, either, you know, whether you think of Spaced or you think of Shaun of the Dead, you know, sort of that sort of relationship as being the closest thing I can think of in terms of our modern media showing men having a dynamic. And I don't actually think that Doyle would have ever described Holmes as and Watson as being very sensitive, but because of sort of this hyper-masculine time where men's relationships are very violent and based on almost like military style camaraderie, it's really easy to see why that interpretation of sort of a quiet intellectual relationship would be considered very sensitive or very appealing.
Well, yeah, let me ask a question. I have a question based on my old age. So when I was a kid, for boys, the opportunity to see pornography consisted of, there were burlesque shows, there was Playboy magazine. Obviously, we were not welcome to go to those, but you could dream about those. You might sneak into that. You might find some grown-ups' copies of Playboy magazine. What did girls do? There were no opportunities for girls to see porn, the quote, porn, or even sexual material.
Girls aren't supposed to like that stuff.
Well, I understand. And that is clearly the standard of my generation. Has it really changed?
Yeah, because now we have.
I think it has.
I was going to say we have the internet.
I honestly can't think of a single thing. I mean, I don't know, maybe Disney movies. As sad as that is, I mean, you think about sort of, it wasn't pornographic. You know,
it's just like I have a crush on that character.
Yeah, I have a crush on that guy, or I have sort of a faux relationship with him. I remember I loved The Princess Bride as a young girl. It's still one of my favorite movies, and I remember sort of, you know, being fascinated by this man, but I didn't. There was nothing pornographic about it because I just don't think it was available to us. It wasn't, I can't think of anything prior to probably 2004 where I would know where to go for that kind of thing.
When boobs came on the television screen in R-rated films, when I was watching them at our house as a 13, 14 year old, my mom would take a pillow and cover the screen.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's how I grew up. Not when people were shooting each other with guns, of course. But, you know, when boobs arrived, it was like, oh.
And yet my sense is that in Victorian times, pornography, which was available largely by sort of subscription, it was very private, that there probably were some women who bought and read pornographic literature.
Oh, for sure.
There must have been, but it was a physical object is the trick. You know?
That's correct.
Yeah.
It was a book.
You know what it is? It's all those supermarket novellas that are those with Fabio on the cover.
Yeah.
Or Cosmopolitan magazine, as Playboy used to carry on and talk about pornography. It was all Helen Gurley Brown's descriptions of how to get the best orgasm, you know?
Mm-hmm. A la Cosmopolitan.
Right.
Exactly, yeah. Reaper, I'm curious, Reaper, like, what was your first sort of, I don't know, opportunity to see smut?
Oh, geez, I don't know.
Back in the day, probably.
I'm pretty old, too, but I don't remember. It's just something that I've been around a lot. It's not that, I mean, I grew up in a Catholic family, so it's not that it was part of my family or culture or anything, but it just was something I found pretty early on. And yeah, the internet was just becoming a thing at that time, and so it just came naturally to like go on there and find it. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it was similar for me. When I was 18, I kind of figured it out.
Yeah, I mean, I was probably like 15 years old, and I was on the internet, and I was finding all the slash fiction on the internet.
So were you drawn to that initially then?
Yeah, I mean, I think it just, when I was younger, I got really into like fandom, and it was just something that started happening in fandom a lot, and so I saw it, and it just appealed to me, so I started looking for it.
Mm-hmm. When I was a kid, it was all about the books you could find off your parents' bookshelf, you know? When I was 14, everybody had to read Flowers in the Attic. And everybody had to read Forever by Judy Blume, which was the one book she read that had the sexy times in it. So it was like, oh my gosh, and can you sneak a copy of The Thornbirds off your parents' bookshelf and read that? You know, it was, what can you find?
I think the thing that probably, at least for me or people in my generation, before the internet, it could have been like comic books.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Sort of, because, I mean, okay, I'm Asian, so, like, I'm used to, like, anime and manga. Like, for me, that was my comic book and cartoons. And I remember, being just at a clinic, actually, that my mom took me to, and there was just this random manga that I picked up. I don't know how young I was at the time, but it was, like, you know those, like, Japanese or Korean horror fics where it's just, like, weird stuff? Like, I remember reading that as a kid and just going, like, I don't really know what's happening, but here it is. You know? And I think this was pre-internet, so.
So, Les, so we don't take up too much of your time, maybe you can tell us one thing that everyone can find either online or at their local bookstore that would be sort of an original Sherlock slash fic or something of that nature.
Well, two things. I mean, I guess one, you should, and maybe I'll put it up on my website, is my Baker Street Journal checklist of Sherlockian pornography.
Yes, please do.
I'll have to dig it out.
We'll link to it. If you post it, we'll link to it, definitely, for this episode.
Oh, cool. I just looked on Amazon to see if The Sexual Adventures of Sherlock Holmes by Larry Townsend was still available. And the answer is, it is, for about $100.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Wow.
I bet $10 it's at Autos, dude.
It's an antique. It's a collectible.
But so is Hayes Piercy, but you can get it, my dearest.
Yeah.
You can find it. I mean, it's not...
Exactly. These are not impossible books to find, but that's the fountainhead, so to speak. The Sexual Adventures of Sherlock Holmes by Larry Townsend.
Can we call everything a fountainhead for the rest of the episode?
Yes, we may.
Yes, I know. I've left you with this image now, and you can you can use it. Now, this is not, you know, as far as the earliest films, that's a different question, and I'm not sure. I think I listed some chronologically in my checklist, but I'm not sure how far back Sherlockian pornography goes. My guess is pretty far back. One of the interesting things that I discovered when I was doing the research for my presentation on Victorian pornography was that the photographs looked a lot like our current pornography photographs. You know, the body parts are the same. And there's only so many ways that they fit together.
Unless you're writing in the Omegaverse, and then...
Oh, let's not go there.
I have one question, please, unless Leslie has to, you know, absolutely leave right this second. But, like, I would love to know what piece of Sherlockian erotica just surprised you? Like, a quirky kind of, whoa, I didn't think that would ever happen. Because I see a lot of that kind of thing on Tumblr, and I would like to know if that's happened to you, Les.
Actually, no, it hasn't, because Townsend's sexual adventures really, how shall I say this, covered the waterfront. I mean, Holmes got it on with just about everyone, including Billy the Page, so what's left?
And on that note, enjoy your dinner.
Thanks, guys. I will be listening to the rest of this because I want to find out, and I hope you'll be telling us, where we can get new Sherlockian erotica.
Oh, yes. I'm sure we will cover that.
All right. Well, I'm a hot time tonight.
You as well,
Thanks
sir.
Thanks for coming.
It was wonderful.
My pleasure, always. I'm looking forward to number four.
Yes.
Thanks. Bye, guys.
Bye. Bye. Have fun at dinner.
Bye.
Oh, Les Klinger.
That's too sweet.
Fabulous.
Okay, so I have a ton and ton of questions, and I can either, you know, jump into something or if there's something that you guys specifically want to talk about.
Okay, however you want to do it is good for me.
I mean, is there an issue or like a commentary on something we've already talked about that's burning in anyone's brain?
I mean, I think this goes back to some of the questions that we have, and I think it might be worth exploring some more, which is just, why is it that, and actually this question is coming from, what is her name? Ashley. She says that she doesn't think most fans can relate to a relationship that doesn't have sex. She's at Fangirl Chick on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of curious, do we think that, Is it that we simply cannot imagine a relationship without sex? I specifically, actually, when I read this comment, thought of the Elementary adaptation and how a lot of the fans on Tumblr especially just pine for Sherlock and Joan to get together. And it is to my heart's greatest desire that they do not, that they actually maintain that chaste relationship. And so I'm kind of curious, do we desire that always, or is there specific elements of the Sherlock character that we think we need to see that, or that we deserve to see it in a way?
I actually have very intense feelings about this question. I really appreciate the fact that there can be two characters that can have, like, a really intense friendship, because I think that's not actually portrayed enough on television and in movies, because there is always people getting together. Yeah. But I also think that a lot of people, when they ship characters or they write, you know, slash fiction or anything, they're looking for that, you know, that extra bit. They're imagining what if the characters get together. They're exploring the relationship, and a lot of relationships contain sex, obviously. And that's not to say that all do. They obviously don't. But I think it's fair to say that there's nothing wrong with imagining characters being, like, loving each other and being in a relationship and not having sex, like, a lot, like, asexuality and everything. But there's also nothing wrong with wanting the two characters that you wish would be in a relationship to, you know, fuck like bunnies. So yeah. There's both sides of it, in my opinion. And I think it's perfectly capable to imagine characters not getting it on. Like, as much as, like, I do ship Sherlock and John from BBC, I will come out as a Slash fan. There you go. But I don't actually want
it. Oh my
god,
you've seen Slash on the internet?
Oh my god.
How did you come across it?
I logged onto Tumblr.com. but actually, I don't want to see them together in the show. And that's just my personal desire. Like, I like the fact that they have the super close relationship that is a very intense friendship on the show, but I'm perfectly happy in, like, my little AU world of reading things or seeing art of things of them together.
And that's why
online is that it is possible, and I think people looking in from the outside at, like, the shipper community, no matter what fandom you're in, don't necessarily get the fact that it is possible to ship characters in fanon, but not necessarily want them to get together on the show.
Yeah.
And that's very possible. And it's, I mean, some people do want them to get on the show, and that's okay, too.
Mm-hmm.
But you can play in your little slash worshipper world, and it doesn't have to interfere with your enjoyment of the canon, whether or not your OTP gets together.
Because they're probably not going to.
No, well, they're probably not going to.
You know, and, yeah.
Especially, though, with Sherlock, I think the interesting question, though, is on a show like Elementary, I think it's probably expected that at some point they'll get together.
And it's expected, I don't know. But yeah.
I don't think they're going to, though. Honestly.
I don't think they will, no.
No, Rob Doherty was at this Sherlock Holmes Behind the Canonical Screen conference I was at, and there was a Q&A, and he was like, fuck no, it's not happening. I mean, he said, Rob Doherty said, no, Sherlock and Joan are not fucking. So, like...
Right. And I think
the writers of that show have been very specific that they really wanted to preserve that Holmes-Watson close friendship kind of canon relationship and not have it turn sexual. And I kind of love that they're doing that with Elementary. I really do.
Well, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful friendship. I mean, I think that the reason I relate to Slash is because, like, my own sexuality, I have never been attracted to someone that I didn't already love. You know, like I've never been sexually attracted to anybody that I didn't care about. I would sooner, like, probably walk in front of a tank than, like, have sex with a strange person. It just doesn't appeal to me. I have to care about their brain. So, I mean, that aspect of the Slash dynamic makes a certain amount of sense to me. However, with Elementary, I think that it's a great decision for them to say, yeah, a man and a woman can have sex mentally, just sort of intimately be involved with each other. They can be emotionally involved with each other. But, you know, that sort of interplay is not translated into, like, a physical act. And I respect them for it. I hope it keeps up.
I do, too. I think the question is, though, will the fans revolt or will they be angry? Will they, I think, going back to the original question, can they deal with it? Because I think as people who enjoy sort of Sherlock as a dynamic of seeing John and Sherlock together in a homoerotic way, I think there's just cultural expectation that eventually a heterosexual pairing is gonna pair up, whether or not we expect them to, whether or not the writers want to say they will or not, we expect them to. And I hope they don't go through with it, but I do wonder if the fans will be able to put up with it.
Liz, what are we gonna send them if they manage to do the entire series with, like, no fucking?
Oh my God, we will send them the biggest gift basket of that is a great question. What is the perfect thank you for not making our two characters go at it?
Anything wrong with shipping that. Sorry.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with it, but I think it's important. It's for me, it's beyond even the Sherlock Holmes canon. It goes back to the question of we don't have enough relationships from real life on screen. And I think that they've actually done a good job of showing something that is true in real life, a man and a woman being friends and not having sex at every opportunity.
I have a ton of male friends that I have never had sex with.
Well done, Lori.
Thank you. I'm very proud. You're right, that is something. It's like when you have a man and a woman who are friends on screen, no matter what size the screen is, the expectation is always that they're going to bang at some point. And it's fine if you have a romance, but it doesn't reflect the grand human experience of interpersonal relationships.
That's my right. Three best friends are men. One of them I bang because I'm married to him. The other two, not so much.
Well, what other questions should we tackle today, guys?
Let me look at what we got here. I mean, there's, like, the really intense ones.
I mean, why don't we go for some of the intense ones that are maybe a little more funny, which is just, you know, quite simply, why do women enjoy imagining two men together?
It was ridiculous, and then I responded to it, and I was like, what? Like, you guys can look at lesbians all day, and then women can't think that, like, men with cute booties could kiss each other? Like, and touch penises? I don't understand the nature of the question. It's like the person asking the question, who is, I'm sure, a perfectly respectable and wonderful person, had no idea men like lesbian porn.
Well, I think it's just like, it's sort of when people open the Pandora's box of something they didn't realize existed, and they're like, holy shit, I just discovered a completely new side to the other 50% of the population, you know?
Right.
I think it is sort of, I hate to say this, but I think when you have a conversation with men about Sherlock, they inevitably, if they've had enough beers, they'll sort of get around to saying, you know, and are you into that thing on the internet? And you know what they're talking about, but they're not going to say the thing about the penises touching. So I think it's just, I think they're just surprised by it, but I think the simple answer is people are people, they're mammals, and they like sex.
Well, it's fascinating, yeah. Because I think that guys still are like, they get like, I don't know, weirded out that girls like watch gay porn. And it's like, well, you watch gay porn, why can't I? And like the same person that asked the question, like, why do women enjoy it so much, also said like, this means that male sexuality and female sexuality are basically the same. Is that what we're saying? And like, yeah, like,
oh my god, humans are humans.
What was that first? I just started watching CBS, but like the first episode or something where Sherlock, actually, I think he mentioned something about how sex is a commodity and people should just like, you know, it's like it's normal.
Yeah, yeah. Because he actually seeks out sex partners that are purely. You know, from his perspective on the show, it's part of his healthy balance of life. You know, he has to have that in order to be
it's
a healthy.
Like having a smoothie for him.
Yeah,
it's like it's like you know, you need food and water to survive as a human being, and I guess sex.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a natural human instinct, natural mammal instinct.
Well, unless you're asexual, which we also will cover later when we get to the deep questions, but the the point is 100% valid. It's like, okay, I'm scratching an itch. So I don't see any difference between women looking at gay male porn and men looking at gay female porn. Am I supposed to see a difference? Because I can't.
Well, there's a million, like, scholarly sociological treatises about the women in the slash phenomenon and about why women would enjoy seeing men have sex versus a man and a woman having sex. And there are a million theories about why that might be, anywhere from women liking to have a sex fantasy that they can remove themselves from, women liking to have one that they can't insert themselves into, from just the kind of baseline, hey, I like dick, one is good, two is better.
Right.
And
it's like a super hetero with a cape.
And there's also a theory that it's a kind of wish fulfillment where women are projecting onto men in a slash relationship the kind of emotional availability and behavior during sex that they wish men showed toward them. I've read that theory, too.
Yeah.
I think that theory is total bullshit.
I don't know how I feel about that theory. I'm just putting it out there, you know?
It is a theory.
It is a theory, and there my opinion stops.
I appreciate that you brought it up, because it's...
Yeah, I mean, Reaper, you mentioned that you wanted to walk in on Sherlock and John doing it. So I guess, does that sort of, like, I don't know, fantasy or whatever, of seeing, like, two males together, like, what do you think about that? Is that something you ascribe to?
Yeah, I guess. I don't really have much more to say about it than that. It's just aesthetically appealing to me, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I think that's what a lot of, like, lesbian porn is to guys. They like the fact that there's four boobs instead of two, or, you know, six or eight, like, depending on what you're watching. So it's like, it's aesthetically appealing. Like, what's wrong with seeing two pretty guys, you know, touch each other?
Exactly. There is not one single thing wrong with that.
There you go.
And so many slashers I know are in happy relationships. It's got nothing to do with filling an emotional void that, like, or, you know, if it is, then more power to you and, like, God bless you, and I hope that you feel better soon. But there's a lot of slashers who don't have an issue as far as relationships go and just really want to picture Holmes and Watson doing it. And there's nothing wrong with that either. It's just, as Reaper just said, aesthetically you know, pleasing.
And it could also be something like, as a woman, I will never have a dick. And so it's sort of like that thing you're like, it's like imagining or just like something that you're so removed from that it's interesting. And like, and we can get into like the whole like writing mechanics, especially with Lori. It's like a lot of people have asked like, how accurate is slash fiction? Like, is this just like what, you know, a bunch of girls are just imagining that it is, or, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Cause, you know, with all writing and with all media, there's always like sort of like a sugar coating. Because I think, as Sketch said at the beginning, sex isn't really that sexy most of the time. So, you don't want to necessarily be reading something, you're like, oh, God, no, just stop. You're, like, you're reading it going, oh, that's nice. Or like, yeah, like, well, these are
writing slash phenomena. I'll come out of the closet here and admit that I am not exclusively a slasher. Like, I've written in many fandoms, and only in two of them have I been a slash writer. I've written Hess in all of my other fandoms. So, I hope this doesn't disillusion anyone.
No, that's great.
But it for me, it's not so much about the whether it's a same-sex or opposite-sex pairing. It's, do I find the pairing itself appealing? And I can never tell when I'm going into a new fandom what pairing I'm going to find appealing. It might be a slash pairing, or it might be a head pairing. I can't control it. It's like my brain just decides.
No, totally. Right. Yeah, because, like, I like John and Sherlock, but I'm also kind of a closet Sherlock shipper. So, like, I had those two warring factions in my brain.
That shouldn't be closet.
But they can be at peace. They can have peace among the factions.
Yes.
It's and called AU for a reason.
I love AUs.
Raise your hand if you ship Han Solo and Leia Organa, for God's sake. It's pretty easy, man.
I spent 5 years writing Harry and Hermione fan fiction, so.
Ah. I know, I was always Hermione and Ron, so.
Well, you're one of those people.
I'm one of those.
And I haven't finished the book.
Harry Potter sketch.
You haven't finished Harry Potter sketch?
No. No, I haven't.
You were like 10 years behind.
Yeah.
You ship Draco.
I'm not even really trying to catch up.
You have plenty of time. Take your time.
Yeah. I've had, my hands are too full with Sherlock.
Fair enough.
That's exactly I won't watch Doctor Who. I won't watch Doctor Who. That's exactly the reason, Sketch. I won't watch it. Like, because I know I'd love it, and I don't have time.
I started watching it. And I think it kind of slowed down for me.
Did it? Where did you start? The Ninth Doctor?
The Ninth, yeah.
Yeah, me too. I don't want to offend anyone.
Are we off topic now?
Right. Yeah, that's okay.
Back to Sherlock.
Back to Sherlock.
Stay tuned for part 2 coming next week. Yay!
If this quotidian world has got you crying, won't you too?